and of volunteers trying to resuscitate them. She told reporters from The Guardian that about a third of the people rescued on Wednesday were children younger than 5 years old, mainly from Syria, with at least 25 of them suffering from serious shock, from hypothermia, and from other injuries.
A leaked email has revealed that editors from newspapers in at least five states owned by the Georgia-based Morris Communications Company were ordered by their parent company to print an Islamophobic op-ed in their newspapers. The op-ed opposes President Obama's plan to provide asylum to 65,000 refugees from Syria and making sweeping generalizations about Islam. The refugees, according to the editorial, will destroy America. The papers were told to print the editorial without altering its position or naming an author. A leaked email containing those instructions has surfaced when a whistleblower within one of the papers decided to reveal the editorial control being pushed on the paper to print a piece of anti-Islamic propaganda. All but one of Morris's 11 daily newspapers printed the piece without changes during the third week in September.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imamc.org, for Thursday, October 29th, 2015. Two Palestinian civilians were killed by Israeli gunfire. Meanwhile, clashes continue all over the occupied West Bank, Jerusalem, and Gaza. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. In the southern West Bank city of Hebron, Farouk Abdel Qader Sidr, 19, was shot dead in a Shuhada street close to the Beit Hadasha illegal Israeli settlement in the old city part. Israeli troops said that he tried to stab a soldier. Meanwhile, eyewitnesses said that Sidr was just walking home when he was shot. Soldiers left the youth bleeding on the ground until he died and did not allow ambulance crews from providing him with medical assistance. Later, armed settlers and troops attacked nearby homes, witnesses said. Just 3 hours earlier on Thursday, Mahdi Muhammad Ramadan Al-Muhtasib, 23, was shot dead by Israeli troops near the Ibrahimi Mosque in Hebron Old City. Eyewitnesses said that soldiers shot the Palestinian from a close range. The Israeli army claimed that Al-Muhtasib was shot after stabbing a soldier, lightly wounding him with a cut to the face. The circumstances of his death remains unclear. Also on Thursday, Nadim Shrikat, 52, died after ambulance was unable to reach him in time due to the excessive military roadblock and blockade isolating Palestinian communities in the occupied city of Jerusalem. Shrikat suffered a heart attack at his home in Jabal al-Mukabbar town in Jerusalem. The ambulance was held up by Israeli roadblocks for more than 10 minutes, which led to the man's death. With the three latest fatalities on Thursday, the number of Palestinians killed by Israeli army fire in occupied Palestine since the beginning of this month has reached 68, including 14 children. The Palestinian Ministry of Health said that at least 914 Palestinians have been shot by live Israeli army fire, while 878 were shot with rubber-coated steel bullets. In Jerusalem Old City on Thursday, radical Israeli settlers invaded the yards of Al-Aqsa Mosque. Palestinian worshippers praying inside the mosque stopped the settlers from going any further and forced them out, local Palestinian sources reported. The recent wave of protest by Palestinians started last month after daily invasions targeting Al-Aqsa Mosque by radical Israeli settlers and attempts to divide the third holiest site for Muslims worldwide. In the meantime, clashes between local youth and invading Israeli troops were reported on Thursday in Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Hebron, Nablus, and Ramallah. Palestinian sources said that at least 16 Palestinians were injured by Israeli army gunfire and tear gas in Ramallah, including one youth who was shot in the head by Israeli live gunfire, medical sources reported. Meanwhile, four teenagers were shot by Israeli army rubber-coated steel bullets during clashes in Hebron Old City. Late on Wednesday night and Thursday at dawn, Israeli soldiers have kidnapped at least 40 Palestinians in different parts of the occupied West Bank, including occupied East Jerusalem. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Thursday, October 29th, 2015 News Roundup from the Occupied Palestinian Territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is David Custers, Doug McVeigh, and Robin Ryan. The producer is Sam Bowman. Our engineer is Matthew Olson. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Sarika Mehta.
And I'm Robert Barncord. Coming up tomorrow morning, Friday, on KBOO at 7, it'll be Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Positively Revolting Talk Radio, the guest host, Lisa Loving, spends the hour with local grassroots activist and author Ajamu Umi, the founder of Portland's All-African People's Revolutionary Party and their breakfast program for local kids at Columbia Villa, which is now serving dozens of families. At 9, we'll speak with Graham Russell of Rights Action about how policies and actions of the Global North negatively impact communities in Central America. At 10, it'll be Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, on the Radio Zine, we'll hear a recent presentation on rising up against the natural gas fracking infrastructure and government and corporate plans for LNG terminals and also constructing pipelines through our Northwest forests, rivers, watersheds, and across private farms and fields. A big thank you to all of you KBOO members for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one easily by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. Good night, Sarika.
Good night, Robert.
Good night, Matthew.
Good night.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Thank you for listening to the KBOO Evening News. My name is Sam Bowman. A showdown over city-owned property is brewing in the small city of Gladstone, east of Oregon City. The city is facing state requirements that it update its public buildings, for example, to increase their resilience in the event of an earthquake. Recently, the city unveiled a ballot measure, number 3-471, which would allow the city to incur debt and spend city funds in excess of $1 million for the construction of a new city hall and police station. One of the ways they plan to raise money for the project is by selling, quote, certain city properties for something around $3 million.
My name is Glenda Shear, and I live in Gladstone. I've lived there with my husband and daughter for 6 years.
I spoke to Glenda and another resident of the Gladstone area, Allie Miller, this afternoon. A week ago today, they and other residents found out that the city planned to sell what they had thought was a public park called the Gladstone Nature Park.
The city hosted a town hall meeting on October 22nd, and people in the audience, myself included, asked, you know, what property are you guys considering selling off? And they identified it as that property. And when people in the audience asked, well, in the brochure of the voters pamphlet, it says that Councilman Johnson states that no parklands would be sold. And how is it that you can say that, but yet this is what you're planning on doing? And so the response then was that, well, it's not actually parkland.
The park, which includes a short pedestrian trail, is actually zoned for commercial development, or C2 to be exact. I called the city of Gladstone, and the assistant city administrator, Jolene Morishita, confirmed that the park is in fact zoned for commercial development, which has confused many residents because
it's listed on the city website as a park. The city of Gladstone received grant money from Metro to develop that trail. And so then most recently with the measure that's coming up, the voters of Gladstone will be voting on Tuesday, we were asked to approve a ballot measure to do some improvement and provide some civic buildings that we desperately need. But there's a little bit of a, some hidden information there because it wasn't fully disclosed what they were planning on selling off. And so the bottom line is that the city wants to sell off that property.
A number of residents were put off by this discrepancy, and while acknowledging the need to update their public buildings, tried to make it clear to the city government that they wanted a clear presentation of the facts. To be clear, as of this broadcast, the City of Gladstone's website contains both a description of the Gladstone Nature Park under a listing of other public parks, and a zoning map that shows it to be, legally speaking, undeveloped commercial land.
To allow a situation to exist where they aren't, they're presenting misinformation on the city website was wrong in my mind. So what I did is I actually emailed Mayor Jacob Ellis and specifically, introduced myself as being a resident in Gladstone and pointed out that there was a discrepancy in what people knew about that property, and that for the city to continue to advertise it as a park on their own website would be a problem because that would be providing them false information. And his response, unfortunately, seemed a little curt to me. He just said, we've dealt with it internally, we're aware of the problem, but we're not going to change it.
The mayor then went on to add, quote, "Changing the website might help, but I can already hear the detractors saying we're trying to cover our butts. Thanks for the input," end quote.
For them not to correct that information, in my mind, makes me feel like they're willing to move forward just to get a yes vote, that they're not interested in truly hearing and allowing the voters of Gladstone to make that decision in a forthright manner.
If the parcel is sold, the city has interim plans that also have citizens concerned, as Allie Miller explains.
We also have some pretty strong concerns about traffic patterns in that area. The roads that surround the property are very small. They're two-lane streets. And people are very concerned about it increasing the traffic and becoming very unsafe. In addition, they're talking about, before they develop it, using the area as a rock quarry.
Which is somewhat ironic, given that the city originally condemned the land almost 20 years ago in order to prevent it from being quarried. Granted, none of the current city council members were involved in Gladstone land use decisions back then. Residents are still concerned about the presence of a quarry, however, even a temporary one, in what is basically a residential area. They also point out that the lack of sidewalks surrounding the park has made the park a safe and useful way for people to cut around a dangerous intersection. Glenda Shear and Allie Miller are two members of the group No on Gladstone Measure 3-471, which can be found by that name on Facebook with an exclamation point after the word No. They are also helping to organize an action this weekend to raise awareness of the park's status.
On Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, we have a protest that we're going to be demonstrating right in front of that property because we do feel that it's important for the voters to know precisely what they're voting on.
Oatfield and Webster on the corner is where we're going to be meeting. And
correct.
And I think we're planning on doing some park cleanups, cleanups of invasive species in addition to trash and things like that. And just try and maintain the ground so that it shows the city that we do love and care about that park.
People from outside of Gladstone are more than welcome to attend the event. For more information, you can visit their website at protectgladstoneparks.wordpress.com, and you can reach the City of Gladstone at 503-656-5225. For KBOO Evening News, I'm Sam Bowman. Rose City Native Radio is next.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:59. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
KBOO Community Radio, along with the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee and the Jericho Movement, is a proud co-sponsor of Decolonization and Political Prisoners, Thursday, October 29th from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Portland State University Native American Community Center. The evening will focus on U.S.-held political prisoners and decolonizing the prison industrial complex. Speakers include Chauncey Peltier, son of Leonard Peltier, Kent Ford, founder of Portland Black Panther Party, and father of Patrice Lumumba Ford, and Ajamu Umi of the Portland chapter of the All African People's Revolutionary Party. Again, that's Decolonization and Political Prisoners, Thursday, October 29th from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Portland State University Native American Community Center, located at 710 Southwest Jackson Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Dia de los Muertos Celebration and Audio Cinema in Portland on November 1st from 1 p.m. to midnight. This is a celebration of life, honoring loved ones that have passed on via food, live musical performance, live dance performance, sugar skull decorating, children's storytelling, and much more. Again, that's Dia de los Muertos.